Civic Group is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization that more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening. My name is Rebecca D., and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The format of this meeting is two 10-minute speakers followed by a main speaker. Speakers, please note you will be given a 5-minute and 1-minute reminder when it is time to wrap up your talk. Our first 10-minute speaker is Kenna F.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Kenna Fukuyama, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Marty, for asking me to do this. I just want to set my own timer just in case. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the job that you've, the hard job you've done this year. And Marty has such a lightheartedness and a buoyancy that I really admire, that has served this meeting well. And oh my goodness. My sobriety date is September 24th, 1985. I'm a proud member of the class of 1985. And I don't have any bad news about my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome you if you're new. You know, it's just sitting during the fellowship time, kind of listening to that music of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And you know, the love that comes through after somebody does their commitment, there's 100 people that then thank them. And, you know, if you're new, I want you to know, I mean, AA works and it works well. And there's really something extraordinary about what you are sitting in. It is working right here and right now. Even just that, you know, all of the thanking that happens and the support and the kindness, like how can you fail in an environment like this, right? And if you consider who we are, right, selfish and self-centered to the extreme, complete failures in the world, people that have to be locked up, institutionalized, you know, put away, et cetera. And yet here we are. I hope that I never stop being impressed by Alcoholics Anonymous. It's really, I love what, a lot of things that Bill Wilson said, but when he wrote about that, well, a couple things that come to mind, that A is not so much a story of success as it is a story of colossal human failure, right? Suffering transmuted by grace. And we're not so much brothers in our virtues as we are brothers in our defects. It's the way that you have failed and the way that you have suffered that saves my life, right? And I love the fact that we tell our stories here. When I'm listening to a story, I'm undefended, right? You're just telling me what's happened to you. I'm not trying to look for the holes in your argument and then I can find myself in your story. And, you know, the other thing that I love, another line of Bill's is about, we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and in which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. And for me, every Alcoholics Anonymous meeting is such a beautiful example of that brotherly and harmonious action that happens and that, you know, that we all are affected by. And I grew up in a alcoholic family and up in Northern California in Santa Cruz. I am very blessed that there's a lot of alcoholism in my family, but there's now a lot of recovery. My nephew, Connor, who many of you know, I have another sober nephew, a niece in Al-Anon. My siblings are sober, very, very fortunate. And I always just kind of, you know, I'm one of those nice Catholic girls that went bad in a hurry. And I can just tell you that I always say this because I just kind of just to identify. So morning at my 8th grade graduation, my mom's at the kitchen table. She had my diploma and some little pins I'd won. And she said to me, "Can I finally got my scholar?" And about a year and a half later, I was in front of my mom again, but I was now behind the counter at the DeWinner Schnitzel. I was working there full time. I had dropped out of high school with a 0.8 GPA and my mom had shown up because I hadn't come home the night before. And the difference between my 8th grade graduation and that year and a half later, when I'm now, you know, a high school dropout working at the DeWinner Schnitzel, was that I'd started to drink. And I, you know, that I took a series of geographics back and forth to Honolulu to, for different reasons, get out of crazy relationships and, blackouts and total cars and all the stuff that happens to us. And I, just to kind of fast forward, I found myself at 22 years old, living in an apartment, very much like the house I grew up in, my, with the phone cut off and broken windows. I was about 85 pounds, and my hair was falling out. My gums were seeded from malnutrition and hearing voices and vomiting liver bile and all that stuff that happens as an end-stage alcoholism. And I was barely holding on to this cocktail waitress job in Waikiki. And I was drinking at the strip bars in Honolulu and kind of the red light district because we seek lower companions. And I was, there's a really good Catholic word that I like, traditions. Spiritual ruin, loss of the soul. And the last couple years of my drinking, I spent, thank you, in that state of perdition, just lost, right? I couldn't go in that liquor store anymore. I had to, I'd been drunk and profane, but that's where my payphone was. And, but I'd have to run across this freeway off ramp and scramble up the embankment, cut a hole in a chain link fence to get the next closest liquor store. And it never occurred to me there's anything unusual about that, right? That's just where the liquor store was. And that's 1985. That day came when it was just a new level of desperation. And I went down to the payphone at the liquor store. I didn't really have anybody in my life. I called my boss at the bar and he came and took me to an emergency room. And I saw a nurse first and I said to her, I can probably stop the cocaine, but I can't stop drinking. And my life has never been the same. I can't stop drinking. Admission of complete defeat, right? And that started my journey here. My first AA meeting, I didn't feel home, but I knew because I was afraid, but I knew I had stepped into the light and I believed you. And, we are very cynical and broken when we get here. But what was here, I believed you. I knew you suffered from what I suffered from and you were free men and women. And I kept coming. I got a sponsor and a home group and began to work the steps. And, another line of Bill's that I love where he talks about, we can't live alone with those tormenting ghosts of yesterday or yesteryear. That inventory that scared me so much, I knew I just have to kind of stop and take a look at that shadow I was trying to run from, right? And look right at it. And I did that with a sponsor and I began to get a little more free here. And, I've had quite a ride here. I moved from Honolulu when I had about 3 years of sobriety and I was working with Marianne, waitressing with Marianne, and I followed her to the Pacific Group. And I have been so blessed to have some wonderful sponsors and mentors here. Certainly Marianne and Vince Yeo and Karen Garrison was my first sponsor here. And Marianne Wallin and Sister Sheila and Clancy. And now I have Nancy Morris, and I've been really, really blessed here. At the direction of my sponsor, I got my high school diploma, and that, because I learned how to show up for things from you, I learned how to go to school, and that ended up with, a bachelor's from UCLA and a master's from Stanford and a couple teaching credentials. And I'm a special ed middle school teacher, and it's nice to feel useful. I don't have, I met my husband, Mike, as many of you know, about, I don't know, it doesn't matter. He got sober at 53, came off a skid row and walked into the Midnight Mission, having done almost 30 years in the penitentiary. And a guy like that, having done that much time, been in and out of that many programs, should not have gotten sober, but that happened. And a woman like me with a walled off heart should not have fallen head over heels, heart on my sleeve, out loud in love with this man. But those two things happened. And we were just astounded that this great gift came along. And we got engaged and bought a house. And within about a month of being in the house, it was clear that he was sick. And we were told that he had 6 to 10 months, and we got 10 months and we felt cheated. I remember thinking, like, why would God invite us to this banquet and then take it away after like 3 bites? Right. But I don't think God works that way. I think, I know God was in the pain also. And, we got married, in Clancy's. By that time he was Thank you. He was on a mobility scooter and oxygen. And, you know, we showed up at 1212 Lake Street at the yard at Clancy's house, and there was a wedding that you put on for us. And for 269 days, I was Mike's wife. And he passed away in our home, and we had a meeting at, I'm seeing Rich here, his best friend, Lewis, you know, the Adleys and Rhonda and all kinds of people. Lewis started meeting in our backyard, and, you know, 20 or 30 of you would come up our driveway every Thursday night. And I never thought that I would need you in the way that I did, but I'm so glad that I had dropped anchor in a home group deep and wide, and that, you know, and that that held me up. Right. My time is up, and, you know, there was the world that was with, you know, with Mike, that short time we had, and now the world that is, and, you know, I wish things were different. And, you know, I would say the Serenity Prayer is great for stuff like traffic, but what about stuff that's unacceptable? You know, this was unacceptable, but it happened. And, you know, with your love and with your support, I'm able to walk with it. And with your examples, of course, you know, and welcome it in like everything else. And, you know, in spite of all that, my life is great. And I, you know, I wouldn't trade a minute of it. And I thank you, you know, for what you have done and will continue to do with my life. Thanks so much. And if you're new, just stay right here.
Thank you, Kenna. Our second 10-minute speaker is Vincent T.
Vincent, alcoholic. I'd like to thank my friend Marty. And thank you, Eric Loyson, for calling me. Next time, I'm not picking up the phone call. Well, anyways, it's an honor. Thank you for your share, Kenna. You know, it's hard for me every time, you know, me and Kenna talk. You know, Mike's a big part of my sobriety in my life. And without Mike, I won't be here today. But yet, my sobriety day is January 13, 2014. And my sponsor is John Graff. And no disrespect to John, but Mike will always be my sponsor, Mike Fugama. And, you know, I love that guy. As far as back I can remember, you know, my family, I mean, they drank. And I didn't like drinking, but I wanted to be just like my dad. And my uncles and my brothers. And, you know, I started drinking at the age of 8 or 9. And, you know, after that head change and that feeling of drinking, you know, everything changed. You know, I feel so different. You know, when I'm like sober, I feel different from other kids, out of my skin. When I go to school, I was like the different kid, you know, and when I drink, it makes me feel a part of, and, you know, I feel like I'm wanted, you know, but, you know, and that drinking just kept going, and I couldn't stop. Yeah. I wanted to try other things. I wanted to be the cool kid. I wanted to be the badass, you know, that could drink, but really I can't. I hate the taste of it. But anyways, fast forward, you know, the age of 13, due to my drinking and thinking, you know, and you know, I got in the wrong crowd, and, you know, I got shot, and, you know, I went to the hospital, and, you know, all I could think of is when I recover, you know, I would want to continue doing what I'm doing. I guess it's just the disease in me, and I couldn't stop, and I kept chasing that high, and I kept chasing my so-called family and my friends, my homies. And, you know, at the age of 16, I got shot again due to my drinking and thinking, hurt my family, everybody that loved me and supported me all the time. And, you know, that didn't stop. You know, I got married at the young age. I lost my first marriage. I lost my kids, my two beautiful girls, in and out of juvenile hall and in and out of county, in and out of prison. And, you know, I wanted to stop. I wanted to change, but I didn't know how. I tried for, you know, let's say a good month or two, and I just fall back to the same thing, because I guess that's all I know. I really wanted to change for my parents, for my ex-wife, you know, and for my kids. But when that moment comes, I get to spend time with my kids and visit them. Right there in that moment, I can't wait. Like, I'm like, when is this visit gonna be over? Is this due to my disease? And you know, like, I miss them, I wanna be with them, but when I get that chance, I just blow it. And you know, that kept going. And you know, I didn't know how to change. I needed help, but deep down inside, I know I wasn't done. And I'm tired of hurting people and my loved ones and my family. So, you know, fast forward to when I was looking at some time in prison, and I sat there that night in my bunk and I prayed to God, and I was like, if you're really up there, can you please just let me hold my kids and my parents one more time before you send me to prison? And right there and then, the next day, like, I never get released, you know, it's either I'm doing time or, you know, and I got released. And right then and then, I had to keep my promise. And I got on the phone and I called and I called and I called and I called. And my sister was working at the midnight mission at the time. And I called that phone number she gave me. She was so tired of me too. And I kept calling, and I called for a month, and finally Don Haffenberger picked up, and he was like, man, you really want this chance, huh? And I was like, yeah, just give me that chance and I'll be there Monday. He's all right, be here Monday at the midnight mission sober. And, you know, I got on the bus and, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I wanted something different. I was done, and I had to keep my promise to God. And, you know, and I got there to the midnight mission, and I was like, I don't know if I want this, because I sent all these tents and skid road, and I'm like, nah, this is not for me. But I kept pushing because I made that promise to God. And I went in there head first. I dove in, and, you know, I met Clancy. I met every, you know, all the guys that is in my class. Some of them are still here. And, you know, I did everything they wanted me to do. Clean up, I'm doing it. They wanted me to be in the kitchen, I'm doing it. They wanted me to do late night, I'm doing it. And one of my friends, Sean McCauley at the time, tricked me into coming to PG. He said, hey, if you come to PG and you don't like it, you could go back to doing what you're doing. And it was a Monday night, Ohio. And I went there. And that was the night I met Mike Fujiyama. And, you know, he was like, I'm your sponsor, call me. And I'm like, what is that, you know? Just call me. And I called him. You know, I did 7 commitments, you know, 7 meetings, and I took the bus. You know, I did everything what Mike wanted me to do. Like, it was different, you know. And I just kept pushing. I went to midnight to Mile High. I was in the play, like, I was the Chinaman, and I'm like, dude, like I'm like a big badass gangster, and like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? But I kept my promise, you know, and I wanted change. I wanted something different, you know, and it was crazy. I was dancing and I was singing. You know, I did everything. It didn't matter what it was. They wanted me to do anything, and I did it. And, you know, the grace of God, it kept me going. And, you know, due to PG and AA, you know, thank God, I got friends in the group. And I got into the union. I'm an iron worker now. And, you know, it's crazy. You know, I was just thinking about how my life would be if I didn't make that move to come to the midnight mission, you know. And to meet all my friends tonight and having this talk and meet Marty, you know what I mean? I know I'm a Cowboys fan, Marty. This is for you. This is for the star. Anyways, you know, I got my kids back in my life. Man, I got good friends like Dave Wilson, you know what I mean? Everybody tonight. Man, to the newcomers, man. I'll tell you this. You just gotta do something different, you know, something that it's not working for you. You just gotta do it. Listen to somebody else, you know. You know, I got my kids back. I got a beautiful life. I have no complaints. Sometimes I do, because, you know, with the kids and then the wife and, you know what I mean? You can't really have your free time anymore. You know what I mean? It's not all about you anymore. And, you know, when times get hard, you know, I call my sponsor, I call my friends, and man, it's a good life. You know, it's not easy. It's not, you know, but I'm doing it, and today I'm sober. And thank you, Marty, again. Thank you, all of you guys. That's all I got.
Thank you. Our main speaker tonight is Thomas H.
Hello. My name is Thomas, and I'm an alcoholic. I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous since November 8th, 1983. I was born to a 15-year-old girl in Austin, Texas in 1953. She married a man 22 years older than her, and I didn't meet my real father until I was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys. I was 22 years old. My mother worked at a Montessori school at University of Texas, and I went to Montessori school from 2.5 to 5. And so I was a pretty nerdy kid. We lived about 10 or 12 feet from a pool hall. And I ended up being a very good pool player. There were two guys sitting out front all the time in my young life, because I think the story is going to go where when I saw alcoholism, when I saw it. And so I had these hints along the way. There were two guys that sat on a stoop in front of the pool hall every day, and one was named Whiskey, and the other guy's name was Seth. Now, that a guy named Whiskey, homeless, dirty, stinking, smelly, that should have gave me a clue right there. I mean, how did you get that name, Whiskey? As a kid, you know, living near a pool hall, I saw men pour, you know, break the cap on a bottle and pour it on the ground and say, that's for my buddy Joe. You know, he'd pour it on the ground before they'd take a swig. And I didn't know what that meant. You know, I did good in elementary school and in high school, and I, you know, tampered with a few chemicals, but never a drinker. Just never a drinker until I was a drinker. At 16, I left home because my mother had too many kids and I had to get out of there. So I went to Oklahoma City to live with my grandmother. And she had one rule: I had to go to church every Sunday. And I did. And I had a two-pack-a-day habit of smoking at 16 years old. I stayed in high school, and I just really don't have much of a drunkalogue along those lines. And so I couldn't play football in Oklahoma because it was a border state, and you couldn't play football if you moved to another state without your parents. And so my junior year, I learned welding, and I filmed the football games. And so then my senior year, I almost killed people. I got to be 6'3", I got to be 220 pounds, and I could really run. And, but I, even with all of that, there was an airplane crash in Wichita, Kansas. I think it was the University of Kansas lost their whole football team. And boy, I hurried up and wrote a letter. I mean, they lost the whole team in a plane crash. And I wrote this letter that I would like to be part of that team. And I get this letter back that, no, we're not interested. I'm thinking, so I can't even make a team where there's no players. That was pretty discouraging. I was an inch from going to Vietnam. If I hadn't have flunked geometry in my sophomore year, I was 1A when I turned 18 in 1971 when Vietnam was on fire. So I went from 1A, because I had to go to summer school to finish high school, to 1S, one school. I attended Langston University. And the first time I saw a guy fall like a stick, he just fell. He didn't break his fall, fell on his face, knocked all of his teeth out. We were drinking wine, but he had drank too much wine. I didn't think any of thing of that. I didn't think much of that. I played college football for 4 years, made All-American. And January 29th, 1979, I was the number one draft choice for the Dallas Cowboys. And I went to Dallas. I saw, yeah, man, I see you, Vincent. I see you. I feel you. So I go to Langston University. And I'm still not drinking. I'm drinking wine. I'm drinking, you know, M Mad Dog, Ariba, these 19% wines. And they get to you pretty quick. But I didn't start drinking for a long time. Right now, I have no ability to mix a drink. I don't know how to mix vodka or gin, but I do know a lot about 151 rum because it's flammable, and rubbing alcohol. And I'll tell you what, you're looking at a real alcoholic here, boy. When you take a shot of rubbing alcohol, you're in a bad spot. My rookie year with the Dallas Cowboys, you know, made more money than I knew what to do with. And I went to the Super Bowl. And I ran the opening kickoff in Super Bowl X. And it was in Miami. So life was good. Dallas was great to me, but... And I still, you know, we'd go out and I would, you know, gin and tonic. You know, I used other chemicals, you know, for recreation. And so I was with the Dallas Cowboys for 5 years and we went to 3 Super Bowls. We won Super Bowl XII in New Orleans. My friend Marvin Gaye was my guest that weekend. But let me back up a little bit. Richard Pryor was a dear friend. And, you know, I did some things with him that when people talk about getting high, you know, when I saw the pictures last week of Mars, you know, when they did that, I was somewhere ahead, somewhere farther than that at times in my life. In 79, me and my head coach were not getting along, and I got fired from the Dallas Cowboys. And I started to drink. Tangerine tonic. And I drank a lot. So I went to the 49ers in 1980. And I went to work drunk, and Bill Walsh looked at me in my locker and get out of here. And then I got a phone call from the Houston Oilers. I went to Houston, and I was there for the 80 season. We went to the playoffs, and I was in a lot of blackouts. And if for $1 billion, I couldn't take you to where I lived. I couldn't take you to the house that me and my wife and my daughter were living. I couldn't do it. And they didn't like me. The football team didn't like me in Houston. I had all this big success, and nobody was friendly with me. So after that season, I really, between the drinking and the chemicals, the NFL contacted me and says, "We know what you're doing. And there's a place in Arizona, Scottsdale, Arizona." So I go to this psychiatric hospital in Scottsdale, Arizona. And it's a psychiatric institution. So after I got settled in, I'm in group one day. And, you know, one lady that I observed her earlier turning doorknobs, just walking and turning doorknobs. And another lady in the group would just keep raising up her dress. And there was an Indian man in there grinning at me. And then a thought came in my head. I go, "These people are crazy." And then I thought, "I'm in the group. What are they thinking? He thinks he played for the Dallas Cowboys. Poor guy. Damn." So I had a friend pick me up from there. Oh, I had my nose was gone, and had surgery. And I went back to Dallas. And then Don Shula called me, the Miami Dolphins. One of his children had been in recovery for a little bit, and his dear wife. So I show up for the Dolphins. Now, you know, the worst place to send an alcoholic in 1981 who had a propensity toward chemicals and alcohol was Miami, Florida. And so I go to Miami, and this poor woman, Miss Dorothy Shula, will never forget her, took me to my first AA meeting. And instead of me paying attention to the meeting, I was looking at her going, "Wonder why is she bringing me here with these people? What is this?" Because I have never heard the term alcoholic yet. No one had told me I was an alcoholic. And so the summer of 1981, I broke my neck. I broke cervical vertebrae 1. It was a burst, a halo burst. I should be a quadriplegic, but God had other plans for me. They put me in a body cast. I was like a brother in a, you know, I was like a brother in a bowl, you know, it was all around my head. It was a vest kind of thing. And I, you know, like, 3 months later, I smelled like a goat. And I went to a different doctor, and he said, "Who put that on you?" And so he took it off and put a Philadelphia collar on me. And so by now I am done. I've been, the doctors have stood over the bed and said, I played 7 years. And they, you know, I could have got 12 or 13 years in, you know. And they go, "You can't play anymore. Can't play anymore." Took what I love most. So I went to California, and my friend Marvin Gaye, Richard Pryor were using chemicals. And Richard had this bottle. It was 151 rum. So me drinking and me being like a don't want to drink, you know, barely beer, little gin. So, but this stuff was flammable. And so they lit their chemicals. I know this is an AA group, but, you know, I have a life. They were lighting the chemicals with it. And then when they, you know, when everybody was just bongos, we would drink a couple of shots of the 151 rum, and I started liking that because it burned, and boy, you know, like my hair grew on my chest, and so I was like Moses running around the desert from 81, 82. I just don't have much memory of it. I moved to Long Beach, California for some reason. I was coming to California to be an actor and I had all these plans, but I kept getting drunk. I kept having these blackouts and so I had an agent in Hollywood and I had, you know, Marvin Gaye was my buddy and Richard Pryor and so I had these friends who were dangerous for me. They were dangerous for me, but I wanted to be there. I'm not going to blame anybody. So if you want a new freedom and a new happiness. So I was living in Long Beach and I woke up in jail and I was accused of a sexual assault. Now, this is not me just saying it, but, you know, a lot of people consider me a sex symbol. So I don't do that. But when you drank a bottle of 151 rum, blackouts, I've had more blackouts than I would admit to. So I sort of came to at the Long Beach jail. That was November 2nd, 1983. And my lawyer buddy of mine came and got me out of the Long Beach jail and took me to Santa Ana. And I went into the care unit under Dr. Persh. And I still didn't know. I don't think many people know how blackouts work. You really don't remember nothing. I met Dr. Persh. And then I met, this is funny, y'all. I talked to my sponsor before I'm doing this. And, you know, because I know some people. And he goes, well, you can't break their anonymity, but you can break mine. So my sponsor is Chuck Denmark, Laguna Beach, California. Chuck Denmark. And he's such a good sponsor. He was a lot like Clancy with me in that he told me on my 35th anniversary, I still have your recovery date in pencil. That's the kind of sponsor he is. So I went to rehab. And I got involved with the program and I met Clancy. I've been to the Midnight Mission. Okay, my sponsor told me not to tell y'all that I knew I sat in Chuck Chamberlain's chair. He didn't want me to tell y'all that. He didn't want me to tell y'all that Frank O'Rourke was my grand sponsor and that Chuck C was my great grand sponsor. He didn't want me to tell y'all that because he didn't want me to break their anonymity, but I'm going to do it anyway, because that's just the way I roll. So I had no defense because I didn't remember anything. So I pleaded no contest. And so I went on a 28-month vacation to the California Department of Corrections. And one Sunday I was in church and my, you know, And I don't think I realized I was in prison. And then I was in church. And one of the Manson killers was in church. And that was one of those days where you just go, what? He's one of the, I really am in jail. Tex Watson. Tex Watson was like two people for me. I go, I really am in jail. We had a Saturday night meeting there. And I did the 28 months, but it was 28 months of big book. It was 28 months of prayer. It was 28 months of changing me, realizing that chemicals and alcohol didn't agree with me as a human being. And that if I ever drank again, which is my biggest fear, which is the easiest thing to do is drink again. But I read all those stories in the big book about and Bill and the airplanes, can you imagine in the 30s getting in an airplane, drunk? Oh man. But 7 months before I went to the California Department of Corrections, Chuck Denmark took me through the steps, and we did it on the beach, and he spent more time with me than I thought. I think I still owe him my life. He read to me. He prayed with me. He saved my life. And so between Clancy trying to get me to come to that softball game and Chuck Chamberlain told me, don't go over there. It's a trick. Don't do it. And so I didn't go. But I did sit in Chuck Chamberlain's chair and look at his view of the ocean in Laguna. So I did the time. I got out and I owed the IRS $380,000, and I stalked them. I stalked the IRS until they came down to my number, the original thing. I got married, and then I had this. I wanted to go home. I wanted to go back to Austin, and my wife said she's in the program. She said, "No, I'm not leaving my family to go over there with you." I was okay. So I went home. And my mother was still drinking. My family was still very dysfunctional. But I was sober. And my life took off. I started making films for prisons and rehabs. And I built a football stadium for the kids of East Austin. But I got to tell you what I did. I called a press conference and told the citizens of Austin that I wasn't going to eat and I wasn't going home until they brought me $300,000. And on the seventh day, I had $300,000. And so I have a beautiful football stadium in Austin, Texas, that's dedicated to kids. That was 99 when we opened. And then I got this blessing on my mother's birthday in the year 2000. I won the Texas lottery. I won $28 million. And I took I took the cash option, and that took it to $14,400,000. And then with the 39.6 taxes, if y'all don't remember that in the year 2000, it came down to a little under $9 million. And I still believe that I was blessed with that because I didn't eat anything for 7 days. And I had done this thing. And by the way, doing that thing, the University of Texas track team came over and they all putting money in my, I had this five gallon thing. They put money in there and I'd cut a hole in it. And this one girl dropped a bag in it. And they were walking away and I go, what's in the bag? And I reach over and it's a cheeseburger. She thinks I'm bullshitting. I mean, she thinks, I mean, I'm not going to eat. And so I called them all back over. Then I started bawling, crying, because now I really am hungry. I can smell it, you know. I said, come here. I said, here, I'm not playing. It was like the fifth or sixth day I was there. I said, what I'm doing here is real. Ain't nobody bringing me bacon and eggs, and nobody's fixing me dinner. I'm fasting. And of course, I didn't know how to fast. I didn't read nothing about fasting. I didn't prepare myself to fast. I just did an alcoholic fast. It was an alcoholic fast. I had water, and I had squeezing lemon in the water. So it was insane. My recovery over these last 37 years is a miracle. One thing about Clancy, I remember when I was at the mission, he whispered to me, there was a man laying on the floor and he was looking pretty bad. And he goes, that could be you. So I thank him for that. So my life in Alcoholics Anonymous is my favorite words in Alcoholics Anonymous is rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And the thoroughly part of that for me is I don't drink. I don't use. I'm a father to two grown girls. They've spent most of my money. I'm generous and I'm a sucker for them. I love my girls. I have a beautiful story to tell you about my oldest. She was 12 years old. I was living in Austin. And, you know, I'm going to meetings, you know, I'm running a company. This is before the lottery, but she was scared one day, and she had flooded my garage with, you know, out of the washer because she had put quilts and she had just filled it up and it broke the washing machine and it flooded. Water was coming out of my garage when I came home. And I called her down. I said, what happened? And she was scared, looking scared. And I said, come here. I said, I didn't show you how to use this thing. I said, we'll just go get a new one. And that's how my relationship is with my daughter to this day. And then she asked me that big question. She says, can I live with you? I said, absolutely, without hesitation. Well, she went up and told her mom, and her mom screamed at her, and boy, she was crying. And I went to my office the next day. I wrote a check for $5,000, sent it to her mom, and her mom called her like the next day and says, "Oh, you can stay. Yeah, you can stay." And I knew why she could stay. I got two beautiful girls. I have a blessed life. I am so grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of my drug addict friends, you know, there are other fellowships and there are stories, you know, when the Vietnam vets came home and we wouldn't let them come to AA. I hear all that, but I still believe in the primary purpose of every 12-step group there is. I'm a lucky man to have friends who love me. I'm lucky that I have a sponsor who is still my sponsor. He's got like 46 years. And I have friends. I'm in Dallas, Texas tonight. A golf tournament was canceled because of rain. For anybody new, I had 37 minutes tonight to just tell you a part of my story. But these 37 years mean everything to me and my family. My daughters adore me. I take care of my kids. I'm a good friend. I got puppies. Y'all call them pigeons, I call them puppies. What's that alarm? Is that 5 minutes? I have 5 minutes left?
Yes.
Okay. So I've been living in South Florida for the past 20 years. There were too many people, you know, after I won the lottery, there were too many people knocking on my door. Just because they knew where I lived, they knocked on my door. So I moved 1,500 miles away. So it was they'd have to catch a plane to knock on my door. My mother passed in 2003. My alcoholic, drug addict father passed, and I never really got to know him, but I love my mother. My mother went back to school in her 50s, and I was so impressed that I went back to college in the 2000s, and I graduated with a science degree. And in 2010, I got an honorary doctorate from Langston University in the laws, with an S, laws. So my life is good as a direct result of the steps and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of my drug addict friends don't approve of me loving Alcoholics Anonymous the way I do. But I just do because this is where I started and this is where I'm going to stay. So congratulations to the two speakers before me. Excellent stories. Touching. Triumphant. So I would just like to end by saying that I'm sober today because I believe the men before me, Chuck Denmark, Clancy, Chuck Chamberlain, Frank O'Rourke, Dr. Joe Persh, they paid attention to me. They taught me, and for some odd reason, I listened. And it's been the best 37 years of my life. You know, forget the Super Bowls, forget the lottery. My recovery is like Amazon money. You know, my recovery is Amazon money. If I'm going to value it. So thanks everybody for coming out. I do have a drug addict story, but I was an alcoholic first. And that's the way my life is. Thank you for letting me share.
AA birthdays at this meeting. We defined sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, anything which affects you from the neck up. If you're a regular attendee of this meeting would like to take a cake with us, please email our scribe, Ann P., at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org.
Hi, my name's Ann, and I'm an alcoholic.
And please email her by 6:30, otherwise you have to wait until the following week to get recognized. We have several birthdays tonight. This week, we have special guests to sing us a happy birthday song.
Ted M., alcoholic, happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Our birthdays tonight are, we have Dana Z for 1 year. Her sponsor is Cara L. We have Brady M for 1 year. His sponsor is Dave W. We have Bobby G for 11 years. His sponsor is David G. We have Morgan D for 33 years. His sponsor is Tom B. We have Dan S for 37 years. His sponsor is Marty S. We have Mary W. for 40 years. Her sponsor is Mary M. So we had a total of 6 birthdays for 123 years, the average being 20.5 years. Happy birthday, all you recipients. We have a custom in the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on our birthday cake at the end of the year. This candle money is our contributions to AA organizations worldwide. If you wish to participate in this custom, please email our treasurer, Betty H., at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org.